Hello there. This is Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, and Denny Colt, a.k.a. The Spirit. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, all you superhero-loving fans. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Welcome to yet another bonus episode of Comic Book Central this week. There's been a bunch of them. It is Terrificon week, and I'm bringing you my Q&As from the pop culture palooza that is Terrificon in Uncasville, Connecticut. Today, the man who took on Ming the Merciless and saved us all as Flash Gordon. Actor Sam Jones made his Terrificon debut this year. The fans loved it. He was talking Flash. He was talking The Spirit. Denny Colt. He was talking Ted and Ted 2. He was talking about a bunch of stuff. I had a chance to moderate his Q&A. I'm going to be bringing that to you in just a moment. Now, if you're new to Comic Book Central, welcome. Glad to have you on board. You have picked the perfect week to hang out with us here in the lair. Be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes or Blueberry so you don't miss a moment, so you don't miss any of those past moments. You get those as well. Please leave a review in iTunes if you're there. That's always appreciated. Helps get the show recognized. You can also catch up with past episodes on the website, comicbookcentral.net. One of those classic episodes you're going to find is episode 59. That was my in-depth interview with Sam Jones. Lots of good stuff there. Also, if you go back a couple of episodes from that, 57, that's where I sat down with Sam's Flash Gordon co-star, Melody Anderson. So lots of Flash Gordon goodness on those episodes of Comic Book Central. Check them out after today's show if you haven't already. Lots of good stuff in Sam's Terrificon Q&A as well. Now, we touch on a few things that we covered here on Comic Book Central on episode 59. We do get a little bit more behind the scenes of Flash Gordon, had some great audience questions. We'll get an update on the Flash Gordon reboot. Is it a sequel? Is it a reboot? Is it something else? We'll talk about that. Also, we're going to talk about a new documentary that Sam is a part of called Life After Flash. That's all coming your way right now. Here is my Terrificon Q&A with Sam Jones. Flash. We're talking about Flash Gordon, we're talking about The Spirit, we're talking about some classic characters, but really a lot of different aspects to your career too. We talk about these things, a lot of us were inspired by comic book characters, by movie characters, by television characters. When you were growing up, when you were little Sam of 3, 4, 5 years old, who were your inspirations? Was it movies, TV shows?
Or say John Wayne, G.I. Joe. You know, I mean, I had a few comic books, but I think when I was a little boy, I liked the little soldiers, the little plastic soldiers. That was, you know, I turned 62 last week, so I guess in the 50s.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted. I think I remember the back of a comic book. They were advertising, I think it was for 90 plastic soldiers, you know. I think it was $1.98 or something like that, you know, and I pleaded with my parents, you got to get this for me, you got to get this for me, and they did.
So, like, sort of like John Wayne War movies, were those the kind of the pictures you were taking in at the
time? Oh, cowboy
movies. Cowboy
movies.
Okay. Okay, so you like that. So those were your inspirations, right? But then, interesting, though, because then you got into the military.
Yeah.
Okay, so take us into those days. Now, how do you go from military and then into acting? In a Blake Edwards comedy, which is amazing.
It's funny. Well, I played Marine Corps football. I got out in the late 70s, the smallest tight end in the league. Now they're huge.
Yeah.
6'6", 280, and fast as lightning. Yeah. You know, anyway, I didn't have the speed, nor did I have the hands, so I was a blocker. But anyway, so I decided after the Marine Corps, I'm going to go to Seattle and play for the Seattle Seahawks. So a couple of buddies said, well, maybe you need to make some calls first. And ended up playing for their farm team, their training team, called the Burien Flyers. And then, so at the age of 23, I didn't have that, I didn't have that twinkle in my eye. I didn't have that zest for football anymore. I read an article on Clint Eastwood, and it inspired me. At that time, I think Clint had been in the business for already 20 years, in 1977. So I said, well, I don't know if I could accomplish what he had accomplished the past 20 years, but I'd like to give it a shot. So in late 70, mid to late 77, I transitioned to Hollywood. Started studying all that good stuff.
What was it about Clint Eastwood's like? Because was it the diversity of the character? Because he started off as in the Western, The Man with No Name, and things. But then he really got into some things like directing Breezy.
Yeah.
He got into like being the victim in his Play Misty for Me. Was it
what year was that?
71.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So was it?
See, I didn't see that movie Misty until later on.
Later on. Okay.
Years later.
So you just knew that the action here, like
yeah,
that.
Rawhide. Rawhide. Come on. How many people remember Rawhide?
Love that. So, okay, so now was it, you had the game show. So you were on, if you have a chance to listen to my in-depth interview with Sam on Comic Book Central, it's great, because you do actually get to hear him on the dating game. Which is trying to get a date. Oh boy, we're going to date ourselves here. Yeah. Trying to get a date with J.P. Morgan. Gonzo's J.P. Morgan.
Not J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan. Chase.
Right.
No. J.P. Morgan, I think she was
a comedian. She was from the Gong Show. Yeah. But yeah, you're trying to get it. He didn't get the date.
He didn't get the date.
Too bad for J.P. Morgan.
Or less a hired actor.
Was it sort of that got you the attention, I think, even into Flash Gordon?
I think Dino De Laurentiis' family member was watching, and they said, you should look at this guy who's making this appearance on the dating game.
Yeah. And so so now these calls are coming in, but you get the gig with, man, check this out, Blake Edwards.
Yeah.
Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
Bo Derek,
yes.
In 10.
Right, but the only people known in 78 was Blake Edwards, Julie Andrews. Dudley Moore was a big name in England, but not so much in America.
Okay.
Actually, we did it in late 77, or early 78. So they asked me to, so I got this part, my first movie.
Yeah.
Called 10, who saw 10? Bo Derek, yeah. So it obviously made Bo Derek. And that started my auditioning process with Dino De Laurentiis. He called me in the first time. We were actually filming in Hawaii. Blake Edwards put me on a helicopter. He put me to Honolulu Airport, and he got me on a plane in time to meet Dino De Laurentiis the first time.
Blake knew this was a golden opportunity.
Yeah, he did. So I sort of, even though I had a small part in 10, I sort of embellished the story, because Dino asked me, well, what kind of part are you, do you have a big part in this movie? I said, oh, absolutely, big part, huge part. I started name dropping Blake Edwards, Julie Andrews, and he said, oh, really? So that helped a little bit.
Yeah.
Of course, the movie wasn't out yet. We were still filming, so he goes,
you can say whatever you want.
There's no way that he can really do his investigative work to figure that out.
Yeah, way pre-internet, so they didn't have to worry about
that. Well, that first meeting started probably the next 8 months of the auditioning process.
Okay. Do you recall, the audition process for Flash? Because how much did you know about
vividly,
the character?
Okay. Vividly. I just knew the comic books. I knew that Buster Crabbe played the original Flash Gordon. But, back in that day in 79, we didn't have video. So, audition after audition, meeting with Dino, and finally, I think it was in March or April of 79. Actually, you're right, the audition process started in 78. So, he flew me to London to start the process, what we call the Hollywood screen test process. That's where, again, no video. The actors prep themselves by studying the scene for days. Full wardrobe, makeup, costumes. I said wardrobe. And you just, you get in front of the camera. You're actually filming the audition scenes.
And they're trying you, with different actors?
Different actresses.
Do you recall maybe some of the ones that came in?
I think Del Hadden was one. I had lots of other people. So after 30 days of the torturous, because it was, being a former Marine, I don't want to hear, I want to hear yes or no. And I'm happy with that. Really, I'm happy with no, but don't drag me along. Don't put me in that pin beat mode of we don't know.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. And
Hollywood and military, two completely different worlds.
Well, yeah. No, yeah. So I guess I reached the point where, you know, I cared, but, you know, let's just get it over with. If you don't want me, you don't want me, get somebody else then, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't say that, but I think my attitude sort of, you know, I think that's what got Sean Connery the part of 007. I think they called
sort of indifference, maybe. Yeah.
And I remember that during that process. You know, not that I had any right to be arrogant or anything, but I remember Sean Connery saying they wanted him to come back the fifth time. He said, hell no.
Yeah.
If they want me, they want me. They don't get somebody else. That's what they liked. They got Sean Connery.
Right? I think Michael Rosenbaum said the same thing with Lex Luthor from Smallville. They said they kept wanting him to come back. And he's like, they got my tape. That's
because
like, they're not doing any better.
The attitude was, if this is the leadership and they're so indecisive, why in the hell do we even want to work for indecisiveness? You know? So it worked.
Now, you're going in now. You're going in with dark hair. Did they put it?
Everything.
Yeah, you wear a wig now in the
I forgot. It was a long, right. It's a good point. I mean, it wasn't just going into the salon back then in 79 and get your hair dyed blonde. It was, you know, it was the whole, it was 7 hours in tinfoil. You know, getting highlights and all this stuff to match the original character. That's quite a picture, by the way.
But, did you enjoy that? Ex-military, your old military buddy.
That's right. Yeah. But it wasn't a one-time process. It was okay. The hair turned white. Now we did it again. It turned gold. Now it turned yellowish white. Come on.
Yeah.
So it was a couple of weeks as well.
Okay.
And the other thing that he tried to do, the original Flash Gordon had blue eyes. So back then in 79, they had this lovely brand new contact lens called the hard lens.
Felt like one of these big giant things.
Felt like sand. So he wanted my eyes to be blue. It felt like sandpaper. I mean, it felt like sandpaper, just rubbing in your eyes. And so came time, like day 29, day 30, of the Hollywood screen testing, and they said, you've got to put the blue lenses in. I said, I don't want to do it. They said, well, then you're not going to get the part. So again, I went into that mirror, I looked in that mirror, and I said, the hell with it. I said, how in the world can I even think about getting success in this scene if I'm, you know, doing this with my eyes? if this is another liability or hindrance or distraction, I said, the heck. So I went into the final audition on film, did it. Nobody said a word. And got the part.
Yeah, it's an amazing looking film when we go back and look at this thing, too. And it's putting it in the time period that, and we talk about the spirit, too. Kind of the same thing. It really is a comic book coming to life. They took that literally back then. Because even the opening sequence, you've got the art strip panels over the credits. They did the same thing in the spirit.
Yeah.
Was that the sense when you were kind of going through this and the direction you're getting to of just like, how do we bring this? Because even the opening scene is like the first strip. It's in the airplane. She's wearing the red shirt.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there like, how much can we take from the comic books in this? Or did like, were you given comic books for research?
When Dino said, okay, this is how I received the incredible news. My first big movie, a starring role. He said, okay, you were Flash of Gordon. I said, you mean I got the part? Yeah. So I was like, it was like, well, that's nice, but it sort of quenched the celebratory moment. You know, like, is he angry because he's actually hired me? But then you learn the Italians, you know, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of screaming, but it means they love you. Okay.
Well, it's kind of your military thing. That probably kicked in, too. Yeah. It's like, yes, your Flash Guard move.
Well, that's when he gave me a stack of books. Okay. Everything said, read this, and I did. And the writer, Lorenzo Sepple Jr., I believe, you know, he was pretty loyal to the Alex Raymond comic strips and all that. I mean,
he had done some work on the original Batman series, I think he had written. Right. So you kind of get that tone. Yeah. That's where, I mean, you hate to say the word camp.
Well, no, it was.
I mean, because Adam West always says, it wasn't camp, you know, we were doing these things, but yeah. It kind of was, and I think now we're almost embracing yeah. the camp nature of it. You kind of go back, so yeah, it's a very interesting take too. Let's throw some questions out to the. Do you guys have any questions?
Yeah, come on.
I've got a bunch of them here, but if you guys have any, what do you guys want to know about Flash Gordon right up front here?
It's probably one of my favorite movies. I mean, I can watch it like once a week, but it is like watching a comic book come to life. Yeah. You don't have the special effects with the green screens. I love the flying guys with the wings jumping on the battleship. How did they actually film those sequences? Because I don't think
it was green.
Well,
some of them were not green, but blue screen.
Okay.
You know, and that's where they put, you know, when I'm up. I mean, it was pretty hardcore. Not for me. Hardcore for all the Hawkmen.
Yes.
They had to be hanging wires. For hours and hours.
How heavy were the costumes? Because you have the wings.
Well, I don't think the wings were, I think, more cumbersome than anything.
Okay.
But they were basically scantily clad, you know. I mean, they were.
Yeah. Yes.
But the weight, it applied to Max von Sydow as main. His costume weighed 60, 65 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, all hand beating, you know. Mm-hmm. But for me, yeah, just put me up on a 30-foot pedestal. Where the rocket cycle was, and put the blue screen behind me, and nobody else. Just okay. Here's your lines, and this is who you're reacting to. And of course, you saw the movie. You saw all the ships and the rest of the flying Hawkmen and space and all that good stuff.
Speaking of the great Max von Sydow, you told a great story on the podcast. For those of you, like when you're doing scenes. So if you and I are doing a scene.
Yeah.
There's a camera over there, they're going to get the wide shot, yeah. So we get, you know, the cover, you know, and then all of a sudden there's a camera over here, we're going to get your close-up, there's a camera over there, then we're going to get my close-up. Yeah. And that doesn't, depending on some actors, some, like, I don't have to be here if we're on your close-up, technically. Something there could be a PA sitting here eating a donut just going, you know, like, hey, here's the, curse you, Flash Gordon, you know. But there's a great story you tell about Max von Sydow, who kind of, like, gave you a good acting lesson very early on in your career. Well, tell us that story.
Well, yeah, we all have something in our lives where somebody mentored us, and whether or not at the time we actually knew they were, you know, maybe years later you think back. Because, you know, when you're young and you're full of piss and vinegar like I was, and out of the Marine Corps and football player, and, you know, I just people tell you things, people of wisdom. And at that age, if you're open-minded, if you respect the person, you know, we should listen, we should heed the instructions and the encouragement. But Max von Sydow was one of those guys I knew right away that, because he was iconic even then, you know, in 1979. But he said, Sam, he said, I've been watching you for the past couple of weeks, and there's something I want to tell you. This was the first thing. He said, you're picking up a tab for everybody at lunch. He said, you've got to save your money. Okay. So that was the first bit of advice.
It's a great bit of advice. Yeah.
And then the second time, we were on the set, and again, the same thing you were talking about, you know, his close up, you know, it takes anywhere from an hour to 2 to 3 hours to turn the camera around, relight it, and to do my close-up. So I told him, I said, Max, you know, just go relax, take off that big 65-pound costume, and you don't really have to come back. And he interrupted me, and he said, no, Sam, he said, I will be back here to give you off-camera lines. And he said, I expect the very same thing from you. And so what he was saying, it was very prophetic. Because he wasn't just saying, okay, you know, it wasn't about me and him, and this is, you know, this is how you do it. This just doesn't pertain to you and I. It pertains to the values and the principles of movie making in general. But it became so prophetic because as the years went on, there's a lot of big stars who will not do that. Matter of fact, I'd rather just look at the tape on the wall than try to react to the nonsense. Because now the camera's off of them, and their objective is to feed me, you know, their lines to me, so I can, you know, be at my very best. It's my close-up. And a lot of times some of them just either don't show up, or maybe they shouldn't, because now they're in the teasing mode. It's okay to tease if you're doing a comedy or something like that. But you really want to get, you know, you really want to compliment and bring the very best of the other performer out. So what he said was prophetic. So as the years went on, so I did, I heeded those instructions right away about the off-camera. When it came to saving the money, that took me about 20 years.
That one didn't stick as well.
Yeah, it took a while.
That one didn't stick as well. You have any more questions? Yeah, right here in the middle.
Yeah. Were there any plans back then about a sequel?
Oh, yeah.
And did you ever think Timothy Dalton would become a future James Bond?
No, I didn't. No, Timothy was a great actor. I personally didn't think he was right for James Bond. Because, I mean, look, there's Roger Moore, there's Sean Connery. And Timothy is an incredible actor. But for me, that's what was missing about his James Bond. Where was that, where was that little grin and that twinkle in the eye and that, you know, that was missing. And God bless him, he got the part. I think they went on to do two, but signed for three, if I'm not mistaken. And isn't the story they shut down production on whatever it was? But
They actually went up for a while.
Yeah, I just thought I thought his character was too, the choices he made were much too serious. Much too serious. But talented guy. Did I go off on a rabbit trail? what was the initial question?
In a possible sequel.
Yeah, I signed for six.
Wow.
But,
you signed for six? No, we didn't talk about that, but you signed for six.
I signed for six, yeah.
Wow.
No, not yet, but Fox.
I really do three now. That's impressive.
Yeah, no, I signed for six. Well, that was Dino De Laurentiis.
Wow, okay.
No, when you worked for Dino back then,
you
were his. You were his forever. But, you know, based on all the numbers and box office receipts and all that, it was Flash Gordon was a big success in every country except America, you know. And then when it hit video, it became a big. Come on in here. You got the next question, by the way.
Make it a good one.
Yeah. But anyway, Fox Studios bought the rights 2 years ago. And I believe it will come to fruition because Matthew Riley, the VP there, has a personal, it's given a personal touch because the same story that Seth MacFarlane told me when he called me, same thing applies to Matthew. When I was 8 years old, I saw Flash Gordon, it changed my life, and that's what Seth said to me. Seth and me brought me in for Ted and Ted 2. And of course, when I met with Matthew Wiley, he shared the same story. So I'm getting these calls from these 8-year-olds back, 35, 36 years ago, who were 8, who have now grown up to be decision makers in Hollywood. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. So and they've been at it for 2 years in development.
Why do you think this character, because everything's a comic book movie now, so you think it'd be a no-brainer, but why do you think this character, they tried the TV series, you actually got to be in an episode, you were in full makeup.
I played a character called Kreb. Who saw the new Flash Gordon series 2007?
That's the problem.
Yeah, you tried. It was missing an edge and all that.
Yeah.
Well, what was cool, I don't think I shared this with you, but when I went to do Flash Gordon movie, Buster Crabbe, I was fortunate enough to not only meet Buster Crabbe, the original, who was also Tarzan, who was also Buck Rogers, who was also an Olympian swimmer. He was so cool. And we did a couple, we marketed them, we promoted the movie together.
Some talk shows.
Talk shows. And he sort of passed the mantle to me, the baton. He says, Sam, I bless you. You're the new Flash Gordon. Great job. And I'm basically blessing you to step into those shoes and take it over. So here's the funny story. That was a great story, by the way. But the funny part, so when I got hired to do this crazy guest spot on the new 2007 series Flash Gordon with Eric Johnson and Flash Gordon. Now remember, if you didn't see it, my character Kreb had been living in a dungeon for 20 years. So my hair and makeup took about 4 hours. I had sores and lesions and black teeth, and I mean, I looked like a sort of a monster that lived in the dungeon. Creepy, horrible person. So now, Eric and I had not met yet until I was out of makeup, until I was finished with makeup as this character. this very scary looking character. And so we're starting to rehearse the scene, and so I felt it was my time now to, and you know, I completely forgot about the makeup. I felt it was my time.
That's a key part of the story, yeah.
To pass the baton on to Eric, right? So I said, come here, I want to talk to you. And I could tell he was a little bit standoffish, not because of my character. And he goes, yeah, well, what do you want? He goes, no, I want to talk to you alone, not in front of everybody. So he's like following me, but he's being very hesitant. And I said, and I took him out by the exit door. He goes, yeah, well, what do you need? I said, when I told him this story, when I just shared with you about what Buster Crabbe did for me, and I said, oh, I'd like to do the same thing for you. I'd like to bless you and pass the baton. And his reaction was, oh, okay. Can I go now? So I was, you know. So anyway, that
wasn't that iconic moment that you were expecting.
No, I was expecting, yeah, but anyway, I just, in other tears words, and I scared the doo-doo out of
him. Why do you think the characters is, like, we haven't seen a sequel yet, or we haven't seen some, like, a big budget?
Well, it's probably timing, and it's not as irreparable people have acquired. There's a double, triple process. When, first of all, I don't care if you got $1 billion. You know, if you want to go make Flash Gordon 2 right now, it doesn't matter if you're a billionaire. You have to prove, well, not prove competency. You have to prove
like the viability of the character.
Viability. Yeah, I know that you can deliver.
Yeah.
You got to prove that. So that means you got to be a big. You got to not only be a big executive producer, reputable, but you got to see. Okay, and I'm bringing in these top names, these stars. And this top director. You got to prove that. So these names have been on board. They had Stephen Sommers, right? Van Helsing in a few movies. He acquired the screenplay rights. And the next process is to follow through with the option. Okay, I paid the $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 million screenplay rights. Now I'm going to follow through with the option, and we are actually going to start filming. When that deadline approached, he didn't do it. Neil Moritz, who did, I think, a couple of Fast and Furious, he did it. Did not follow through on the option. Now it's been to Fox for 2 years, and hopefully they're going to follow through with the option.
Are there thoughts of sequel to yours? Are there thoughts of rebooting? Are there thoughts maybe of here's the original Flash, maybe handing the baton off to new Flash?
You know, it's a great question because it's a it's a politically correct, sensitive issue because we have these creators. They don't like to say reboot. They don't like to say sequel.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like, yeah, maybe it's just it's all about vanity, vanity upon vanity.
Yeah.
Know? And I say, get over yourself. But anyway.
Make the movie.
You're doing part two? Okay, good. It's a part two, Flash Gordon. Right? Don't give me, you know, don't give me these politically correct descriptive lines, okay? You're going to do a part two. Okay, so it's your baby. Got it. You're the creative guy. Okay, yeah, all right. But do it. Let's get it done, you know. I think Fox would do it because Matthew's personal. He's already brought John Davis on board.
Okay.
You know, there's been some other changes. I think Breck Eisner was brought on board as a director. I don't think that's anymore. I got to leave in a couple minutes, so let's get a couple more questions.
Let's get a couple more questions in. Right here?
Yeah.
So, at the time, do you feel that the movie was, like, given the due that it was? I mean, you watch that movie now, it's just an amazing movie. The costumes. My fiancée got to see it for the first time. She's like, oh, my God, the costumes.
Come on.
And the music, like, the driving music of Queen that just, like, drives that movie.
Yeah.
And, like, the dialogue and the sly humor that was put in it, like, I don't think it was, like, appreciated at the time. Like, you watch it now, it's like, wow, what an amazing movie. You feel, like, vindicated with that movie? Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't have any issues with the movie. I'm kind of proud of the work. But here's the deal. Yeah, I was 25 when I did it. I was 20, almost 26 when I saw it. And it's kind of weird for actors to watch, for me anyway. You know, I've only seen Flash Gordon maybe 9 times. Only because I've showed up for personal appearances where they actually have a Flash Gordon screening. So I'm sitting with you guys, and it's wonderful. And one time I actually got to commentate live during, but I was giving all the, if you were looking at Ornella and myself kissing or whatever, then I would be giving the what was really going on, you know, behind the scenes, which was cool. But getting to your point so as I watched it for the first time, trying to be objective,
I sat back and I thought, okay, let's just imagine, that's not me, I'm just watching this whole thing for the first time. Yeah, and it was hard to be, I mean, being objective. I thought, okay, is that camp? Are they being funny here? Am I supposed to laugh? And then after all that brainstorming, I just realized, Sam, shut up, sit back, and enjoy the ride. That's what it comes down to.
And I think that's the legacy of the movie.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah. I think that's why people appreciate it now. But it is tough to get that tone right. I think that probably, for American audiences, that might have been the tricky part. Because in Europe, it's like they like the visuals and like all these things, the spectacle. And here we overanalyze every little thing. It's like a camp.
I mean, visually, it's iconic. It really is.
Yeah. Amazingly. Good time for another question right there in the back there.
The movie is iconic, and it was shot with cutting edge technology of its time and whatnot, and everything's changed so much in 30 years. Not changing anything about the movie other than the way it was technologically shot, are you totally satisfied with how the movie was shot then, or would you have liked the opportunity to shoot it the way it was done, but with today's visual technology?
Yes and no, and maybe. I mean, I left out a very important part. There was a directorial change. A new director came in. Nicholas Roeg did a year and a half of preparation, what we call development and pre-production. He left. He left 3 weeks before filming. Michael Hodges stepped in. Okay? So you're looking at, and that's probably why there was some, you know, brainstorming while you're watching. There's two different visions. Three, actually. Dino De Laurentiis, Nicholas Roeg, Michael Hodges. You have three different visions being captured. You know, preparation. Anything you do, whether it's, this project, a terrific con, it's not, I mean, yeah, we're here for a couple of days, but all the work was already done a year ago, months ago, many, many months of preparation. So, I'm really happy with all those dynamics and facts involved. I'm very happy.
That the movie got made,
yeah. And what was cool, in November, I was back in London for our 35th anniversary party at Bath Theatre. It was incredible. And I did, as a youngster, as a 25, 26-year-old, all these years I've been holding things in because I thought, well, maybe some of these things, you know, I wish I had made a different choice, and why was Dino or the director looking at me kind of weird that day? Did I make a mistake? So I had about 150 questions I was going to ask at the in November, because there was a director, there was Michael, 85 years old, and a couple of other actors, and Brian Blessed. And so we're up in the green room before we go on to the theater, and I had all these questions to ask Michael. You know, did I do something wrong? Did you need something more out of me? But I didn't have to ask one question, because Michael started to talk, and he was talking to Brian, and I was just listening. And then all they said was, Sam, do you know that when I showed up for work every morning, and when Dino showed up for work every day, we didn't have a clue what the hell we were doing. I thought, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Well, that explains a few things.
So that was it. I didn't have a question for him. It was kind of cool, actually. A lot of times producers get in the way of the director. Look, you've got the writer. You have his words that the director and producer bring to life. But then if everybody's, you know, kind of pulling their weight for their vision, see, that has to be worked out in the very beginning. It does. So I think and here you had Flash Gordon, created in 1935. So all you had to do really was just be loyal to that initial story. And I think they accomplished parts of that.
Didn't that even lead to some improvising, like during the football scene? Like,
yeah, you know,
we improvised kind of, like, a lot.
Yeah, it was fun. It was all natural stuff. She had a question, right?
Yep, right in the middle here.
Yes, I was wondering how you felt about your female co-stars.
A lot.
Well,
I'll cut to the chase. Melody and I, we've always been like brother and sister. She actually lived with myself and my girlfriend in London. We were there for five and a half, 6 months. She lived with us for probably four and a half months. We're still like brother and sister. She gets on my nerves a lot. Ornella, yeah, you know, as an actor, I mean, she had her husband or boyfriend. I had my girlfriend. But, you know, there's chemistry there. That's where it has to remain. And out of my 52 films, as a leading man, I've only dated one leading lady. And I'm not going to tell you who that is. But, yeah, and it becomes problematic. I mean, I think it does, you know. But, yeah, doing those scenes with Ornella and Melody was great. You know, I mean, it's very torturous to have to have Ornella on my lap, sort of rubbing my hair and kissing me. You know, very hard work. Very difficult work. I'm telling you.
We mentioned, we want to get to you. I know you got to get going, but we do want to mention, Flash keeps coming back in the audience. Obviously, Ted and Ted 2, yeah. Seth MacFarlane, huge fan of Flash Gordon. Yeah. So we've got those sort of, we talked about fractured versions of yourself there, but also Life After Flash.
It's a documentary, yeah.
Yeah, this is sort of like the documentary, but also the Sam Jones reality show.
It probably is, yeah.
It's like a team of guys following you around with a camera. Yeah, for
a year and a half, I've had a crew, a film crew from the UK, shadow me. And it's been great. I mean, it's the first time in my life I'm not under the guidelines or restrictions of a studio or a network. So I basically have an open platform to say and do what I want to say and do. And it's wonderful. You know, I'm sure they're going to cut out.
It's like you and your cast members from talking.
Yeah, my family, my cast members.
Now, like what you're up to.
What I'm doing now, what I've been doing. Yeah, we got a couple of movies coming out as well. Into the Fist, another comedy spoof of the 1980 kung fu movies. Big cast of martial artists that you would know. And I think Jean-Claude Van Damme's daughter is the female lead.
Kind of spoof on the old.
It's a big spoof.
Action films. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, Life, if you go to lifeafterflash.com, it'll take you to,
you get the Facebook
page. Yeah, you get all the social media, plus it lets you know what's happening.
And you're on Twitter? You're on
all
Facebook?
That stuff, yeah, my wife pretty much handles all that.
Okay, but any of these things, projects we want to know about, we're going to be there. Man. Brother, you saved the universe. You saved every one of us. You continue to save all of us. Thank you very much, Sam.
All the links we talked about today, Terrificon, Sam on social media, Life After Flash, just head to the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. I got you covered over there. Everything we talked about, you're going to see links to. Always fun catching up with Sam Jones. Man, that was fun. Chatting with him on Comic Book Central, episode 59, if you haven't heard it yet. That was fun. Meeting him in Ohio and Connecticut. That was fun as well. One of the nicest guys you're ever going to meet. Trust me. Well, of course, you'd expect that from a superhero, right? Sam is making appearances all the time. If he is anywhere near you, go get your tickets, say hi, chat with him, talk about Flash Gordon, talk about The Spirit, talk about Life After Flash, talk about a bunch of stuff. He was a bunch of television shows, man. He is just a genuinely nice man. Looking forward to that documentary that's in production. Longtime listeners, Comic Book Central, you know if you stay to the end, all the way to the end, just like a Marvel movie, there's a little something extra at the end of the show. So a little more on that documentary coming at you here at the end of this episode, so stick around. Thanks again to Sam Jones for just being awesome. Man, that's everywhere he goes, he's just awesome. All right, folks, don't forget, Comic Book Central, third anniversary special, episode 150. That is Saturday, November 5th. It's going to be here before you know it. Drop me a line soon with your favorite moment from the past year of the show. Anything from episodes 101 on. What did you like hearing? What were some of your favorite moments? Email them to me. Click the Signal Me tab on the website. You might snag a cool giveaway in the process. More details to come on that. The email address, joe@comicbookcentral.net. I want to hear from you. All right, Terrificon week is winding down here on Comic Book Central. But I have got one more Q&A on tap for you. From Flash Gordon to The Flash. Their booths were right next to each other at Terrificon. They're back-to-back here on Comic Book Central as well. He was the original Flash in 1990, Barry Allen. He was Henry Allen on the current version. Now he's the Golden Age Flash, the Flash from Earth 3. Jay Garrick, friend of the Comic Book Central. I am closing out Terrificon week with John, Wesley, Ship. We're talking original Flash. We're talking new Flash. It's the Q&A you do not want to miss. You won't miss it if you subscribe on iTunes. You're going to get it. Go do that right now. Until tomorrow, true believers, keep the Flash Gordon spirit alive. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
My name is Lisa. I am the director of feature documentary Life After Flash. Now, you can't do a film about Sam Jones without Sam. Without
Who's this?
Sam Jones!
Who's over here?
Look at this! So, Sam, why are you on board for Life After Flash?
Well, because it's primarily about the influence and the impact that Flash Gordon has had on the world. Now, you have an opportunity by supporting us, so we want your support. 35 years ago, I put on some tights and a tank top.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Hollywood. I'm going to be an actor. Dino De Laurentiis, you know, he gave me an opportunity.
One day before they started shooting, they called him.
He cast me in the part of this iconic, this legend, Flash Gordon.
When this baby hits it, boom!
Gordon's alive!
And we had to think of a good way to make the spikes look menacing without being dangerous.
Go, Flash! Go! Go, Flash! Go!
It was just on the other side of frivolous.
The nice thing is the comedy becomes enriched because they're not playing it for comedy.
But you don't go in thinking, oh yeah, well, we're going to be talking about this 35 years later.
I've only seen Flash Gordon maybe 8 times. That's it.
We get up early and work late hours. And same thing applies in the security industry.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, you got to separate your personal life from, your movie life. I don't know how you do that.
Hearing Mike order Dino off the set.
He says, you don't want to finish the movie, don't do it. But you never work again.
So I was always spending time waiting by the telephone.
There's not that much work anymore.
You need to walk out that door or make some phone calls other than the movie industry, and you need to come back with a different vocation.
Why are all these celebrities getting upset all the time? Because people are taking their picture. Well, then just stay at home.
He said, Sam, when I was 8 years old, man, you changed my life.
I thank you for saving every one of us.
Well, you're welcome.
He acknowledged it.
Just protecting people from kidnapping and from assassination.
We're running the cross-border security operation.
And I fully believe, after 35 plus years, this is where I belong. Whether I played Flash Gordon or not, me, Sam Jones, the person, there's a lot of similarities, which I can't walk away from.
Gordon's alive!
See you there.